Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. On this week's episode, you've probably heard the term food for thought, but the federal government has now lined up a new advisory council of Canadians and is seeking their thoughts on food.
You know, it allows for community-driven initiatives and right through to huge economic wins.
Also, we'll be checking back in with temporary farm workers who got stranded in southern Ontario and see if they were able to untangle all the red tape between here and home.
I mean, I flew a lot of times before, but that flight was special. That flight was different.
And canola futures are boldly going where no canola futures have gone before. We'll be talking about what's sending them there.
All that canola is being used here in Canada or going for export, not leaving a whole heck of a lot left over.
All this is coming up on Between the Rows after this message.
Your soil has a unique story. At Decisive Farming by TELUS Agriculture, we get that. Start using precise nutrient information to get optimal crop performance. Try our variable rate program risk-free today. Visit decisivefarming.com. Conditions apply.
Welcome back to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. We've been talking about a national food policy in Canada for several years now, with public consultations as far back as 2017, followed by an initial round of budget commitments for food-related public programs in 2019. We're now at the point where the federal government plans to further advance its decision-making process with regard to food systems in Canada, and last week it named a new advisory council of 23 experts and stakeholder representatives to help steer that process along. We have one of those experts with us today, and readers of our various books will be very familiar with her work. Brenda Shepp is known as a farmer, speaker, and writer. You can see her columns regularly in our newspaper, Alberta Farmer. She's also a mentor and consultant and currently director of creative thought for Global Food Lead, a leadership development initiative for the industry.
Brenda, hi, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk first about how you got involved. I mean, when we look at your credentials, I mean, it's pretty clear to me why the feds would want to have you on this advisory council. But from your own perspective, what interested you about taking part in it?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I really believe that food is a universal right. And also I look at it as kind of a connector. So an economic connector, social, ecological, you know, cultural, a community connector, and even justice. And I thought that the idea of a food council shifted from kind of that structural mindset to more the appreciation of needs and values of our Canadians as society. And I like, and I believe in the power of collaborative systems. And I knew this would be highly collaborative, and that really interested me.
Now, has the government asked for a certain term of commitment from council members? You know, I'm trying to get a sense of whether they see, you know, the council as something that's lasting for, you know, sort of just the period of the funding package that's associated with this food policy, or something shorter term or longer term, or.
Well, the information that we have, we're volunteering for this, or appointed and volunteered, but it's 2-3 year terms, Dave.
And just the idea of an overarching food policy for Canada seems like a daunting task. I mean, you've got competing levers of interest all along the food chain, you know, not to mention, you know, all this geography that we've got between people in this country.
Right. Well, it does look a little daunting, but I'm on a pretty exciting team, and we've got some really diverse perspectives, and you know, it allows for community-driven initiatives and right through to huge economic wins. And also looking at it from that upper umbrella allows us to address such things as infrastructure, which is really hard to do when you're doing it industry by industry or commodity by commodity, that sort of thing. And also, it also gives us the opportunity to intersect with other ministries. So that's really exciting.
Now, speaking of infrastructure, the COVID-19 pandemic, we've certainly, you know, seen how instructive that is regarding both the strengths and the shortfalls of the systems that we have in place for, you know, in this country for food production, for food processing, food distribution. You know, I mean, granted, we've been talking about a food policy in this country since, you know, long before anybody had even heard of COVID-19. But do you think when the council meets, do you think it will have sort of changed the overall discussion about food in this country?
Well, you know, the system most certainly was fatigued. But it didn't break. And COVID did really bring to at least my attention things like elder care and vulnerable populations and remote populations, things like that. Like, there's no doubt we remain vulnerable. If there's a port strike or a really bad outbreak in one specific, say, processing facility or something like this, it really hurts. But it looks like there's a lot of strength there. And I'm not so sure that it's going to change things in a really dramatic way. I'm not certain on that because we haven't met yet. But I feel as though there's been full engagement and people have really been involved in working out the problems as they arise. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we look at the vision statement that the government has laid out for the food policy, you know, all people in Canada are able to access a sufficient amount of safe, nutritious, and culturally diverse food. Canada's food system is resilient and innovative, sustains our environment, and supports our economy. Looking at what's been done so far, it seems like a lot of the funding that's been set aside for this is going toward projects to either, you know, to produce and or, you know, to store more food, you know, directly in the communities where it's needed.
Right. And, you know, I can't comment just yet, Dave. We haven't met with the ministry yet. We do that next week.
Okay.
And so I would imagine that all funding announcements would come out of her office, of course. But as of yet, because we're, as a council, we're bringing forward our recommendations, we're also acting on hers. We have a secretariat that allows us that constant communication between the council and government. So I've yet to see what that looks like or where the recommendations are going to land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the other thing too, when it comes to food and people's access to it, that's the other thing it seems like a very fascinating time to be involved in this sort of thing. You know, programs that we've seen so far, such as the surplus food rescue program, for instance, I mean, it showed that, you know, in Canada, we can move perishables fairly quickly to people who need them if there's the will in place to do so.
You bet. You know, and just recently I was involved in a Global Ag Tech conference as a speaker and listen to some of the innovations like with digitization and tech hubs and things that are going on. And our capabilities are really limitless there. So I'm really excited to hear what the other people bring to the table, because it's going to be a learning experience as well. It'll be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like a pretty exciting group. And now, from your own perspective, though, now what issues would you personally like to see, like to make sure that an advisory council of this form addresses?
Well, I guess I've always had a little bit of a global mindset, and so I try and bring that down to but apply it in a Canadian context. And for me, it's really important to attract and empower municipalities to understand food and the capabilities of value adding within their regions. And that, again, can be done with the assistance of tech hubs and digitization and that sort of thing. It also keeps people here. And labor is such a huge issue yet. I know it's an old discussion, but it's still a realistic one for food production. And it also gives us an opportunity, from my perspective, to look at the eradication of interprovincial barriers. Dave, we've been talking about this. I've been talking about this for 43 years, but we've never had kind of an umbrella or a mechanism to take a look at the interprovincial barriers and the infrastructure issue all at once. And this is an exciting opportunity to do that, in my view. And also, I feel that food is a public good. So I I'm really focused on seniors, maternal health, and children. And then when you do that, that brings in other issues, wage parity, universal daycare, things like that. So all of a sudden, we have this opportunity to use one connector, food, and have kind of a cross discipline with other ministries as well. So that's really exciting. From my view, I think it's a great opportunity to empower the Canadian food system.
Mm-hmm. And with all that in mind, we'll be looking forward to seeing what the first meeting of the council brings. Brenda, thanks very much for your time today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Brenda Shepp is Director of Creative Thought for Global Food Lead and a member of the Canadian Food Policy Advisory Council. You can see her columns regularly in Alberta Farmer and at albertafarmexpress.ca. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Just before Christmas, Farmtario reporter Diana Martin filed a story with us on Marlon Gay. He is one of many temporary farm workers who are stuck at bunkhouses in southern Ontario and had been unable to fly home for Christmas due to international travel confusion over COVID-19. This week, Diana checked back in with Marlon to find out if he ever made it home to Trinidad to see his family for Christmas. Let's listen in here.
The last time I spoke with Marlon, he didn't know if he'd make it home for the holidays. In the end, he did miss Christmas with his family. He finally boarded a plane on New Year's Eve. And then as soon as he landed, he went into 2 weeks quarantine. I gave Marlon a call in Trinidad to find out what had happened since and what the future looks like for temporary foreign workers. I started by asking, what did it feel like when that plane took off?
The minute that I actually got on the plane, I had a dream and imagine, you know, about things at home and about the warm weather and everything. A lot of things was running through my head. And I was excited. The feeling, getting on that plane. I mean, I flew a lot of times before, but that flight was special. That flight was different.
So I can't even imagine. I can feel your happiness. I'm sure you were just thinking of, you know, even though you had quarantine, that you were that much mm-hmm. closer to holding your baby girl and, you know, your wife and the kids and just having that family yeah. moment that I know each one of you was just longing for.
That was an adventure by itself. Will everything unfold? Coming out of quarantine, well, 2 weeks quarantine. We need to be also be on 2 weeks quarantine. First week in stay quarantine facility and quarantine for 1 week at home. But I opted not to quarantine for that last week at home with the kids. Mm-hmm. My brother had a free apartment that he doesn't use. I opted to do my last week quarantine there. This was just aired on the side of a caution. I didn't want to because actually, guys that came, all of us left Canada with a negative COVID test. We couldn't get on the flight without it. And actually, before we left quarantine, the first week quarantine, 3 guys actually had COVID. And they were in the dorm rooms right next door to me. So I didn't want to take the chance. Even though I got a negative result back in Trinidad also, guys turned up positive. It was crazy.
Can you tell me what it felt like the first time that you finally got to meet eyes with your wife and see the kids?
Well, actually, the funny thing is that I was seeing her every day for that last week of quarantine. My brother's apartment is just just next door to my house. And the kids actually didn't even know I was next door. Every day she will come and she will bring over food for me. And the kids would see her leaving and I would just open the door a little and she would just pass the food inside, put it on a table. She wouldn't come inside, she would just put a table close to the door. She would put the food on the table and she would leave. And the kids were seeing her going over to my brother's place and I was wondering, is Uncle Showin sick? Because they're seeing her bringing food over to him over there every day. So they didn't know I was going to, they didn't even know I was right next door for an entire week.
Now, yeah, so. Can you tell me what, so just give me a play-by-play of what actually happened when you were able to walk out that door and walk into your own
room. Yeah, that was something else. Actually, I left my brother's place and came over to my place early in the morning. It was still dark. My wife knew. I told her I'm coming over when the kids are asleep. And I actually went into their room and lay on the ground. And when they got up, to surprise them. When they get out of bed, they almost step on me and I was like, eyes just open and shock and they sat screaming. And they threw themselves on the ground on me and started, you know, start crying. And
morale wise, like you're just the heart and soul of you was really put to the test this year. Is this filling you back up? Is this giving you all the things you need to get through another season?
Back home, being back home with the kids and with the family, always is rejuvenating. I try not to think too far ahead about work because right now I have to work and I have to go back to work, and which most likely will be soon, within the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Now, we've heard that there might be challenges with different countries for the workers to get that COVID test that they need in the 72 hours mm-hmm. before they fly to Canada. Are you hearing anything on the ground there about how set up Trinidad is for that part?
No, I haven't heard anything as yet. I haven't heard anything as yet considering that. What I did hear, though, was at our Jamaican counterparts, that some guys already went to the problems that they were turned back from. They were turned back from Canada. They were turned back. So I actually heard that today.
Wait, they...
Yes,
they,
some guys...
They flew to
Canada,
they were turned back at the...
I'm not sure if they flew to Canada, but I understood that the guys were turned back. I'm not sure if it's in Jamaica at the airport before they boarded their flight, or at Canada when they came to Canada out of a negative COVID test.
Wow.
So I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. Is there anything that you wanted to add, Marlon, about just the experience or, you know, coming back, if you have any concerns of the challenges ahead or how you feel about any of that?
I have better expectations for this year. You know, I know things wouldn't be perfect and COVID isn't going anywhere, no time soon. I believe that the plans, that they'll have better plans in place for us. And things seem to be moving along better right now. I always feel safe while in Canada because my employer, they always make sure that we were safe. They made sure that we had a best Christmas that we could have even being away from home. They really took care of us. And that is one thing I wanted to mention also. They took care of us, you know. Through the entire holidays, they made sure that we had everything that we needed, everything that we wanted. They took care of us and we felt the love. They actually carried, the whole entire family actually went with us to the airport. They made sure that we were there. They opted to carry us instead of using Connex transport on a bus. They mm-hmm. drove us themselves and every one of them was there with us. And that felt good. We felt the love and
I appreciate your time, Marlon. I am so happy to hear your voice and you sound so cheerful and just relaxed in a way that you didn't. So like you were very focused on trying to get home and staying positive, but now you sound just genuinely down to your heart and soul, just happy and relaxed. And it's very nice to hear.
I am.
You've been listening to Farmtario reporter Diana Martin's conversation with farm worker Marlon Gay. You can search up more on this story online at farmtario.com. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. It's no secret that the market values for Canadian canola are tied pretty closely to those for other oil seeds and edible oils, but canola's climb way up into uncharted territory these past few days suggests some independent strength here. And to talk about where that's coming from, we have Glenn Halleck here from Glacier Markets Farm. Glenn, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me again.
Glad to have you here. Now, the prices we've been seeing on March canola futures these past few days have got to be some sort of record, right? I mean, it's Tuesday afternoon as we speak. Where are we at right now?
The March contract hit another record high. It closed at almost $831 per ton. The old record set back in 2008 was about $745 a ton. So it's just like ballooned. Even the May contract is getting quite high. I think it's around $770, $780 a ton.
Wow. And fortunately for my laptop, I managed to avoid doing a spit take when you gave me that number there. But Anyway, last time we spoke on the show, we were talking about price rationing and that it might become a thing if canola kept going the way that it was. And that was a couple hundred bucks a ton ago. Are we there yet into price rationing territory?
Oh, yeah, we are. Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada came out with their report recently, and they pegged ending stocks for 2020-21 at about 700,000 tons. And also for a marketing year 21-22, they're still saying 700,000 tons. And this is on production, 19 million, 20 million tons a year. And it's just a wild demand, like not only domestic usage, like for the crush, exports are just way ahead of this time last year. And right now, if you look at the old crop prices, like March, May, and July, they are just going up. There's very, very little a canola to be had. So the price is going up to try and get that last little bit out.
But who's buying at these prices, though?
It would be the commercials. They're looking to fulfill their contracts, so they got to get that last little bit of canola so they can make those deliveries.
Mm-hmm. So would it be fair to say that the profit margin on a bottle of canola oil right now just ain't quite what it used to be?
Yeah. Well, just looking at the crush margins, like you look at the old crop months, the crush margins are just horrible. Even for March, I've only done this for a few years, but I've never seen the crush margins go into the negatives. The crush margins for March canola are -$3.20. But if you look at the new crop months, they're like way over $100 a ton.
Into the positive or the negative?
Oh yeah, the positive.
Into the positive.
Yeah.
So that's obviously there's some signal there of expectations for the prices are going to sort of return to a more normal level or.
Well, once we get into the new crop months, prices will still go up because there's that expectations of smaller ending stocks, but. Mm-hmm. Will, when we get around to the November contract being the most actively traded, will it get up there where March and May are now? We'll have to wait and see. But, when you got that idea that there's not enough canola to go around, that's pushing up prices.
Now, normally the laws of supply and demand eventually level out on this sort of thing, but what do we know about canola supplies in Canada right now? You mentioned this briefly a few seconds ago, but are the prairies going to be bright yellow this summer all the way out to the horizon?
Well, it's certainly going to look that way. Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, in their latest supply and demand estimates, is pegging production this year around 20 million tons. That's up about a million more from last year. But what they're looking at is this marketing year, 2020-21, they're looking at 700,000 tons of ending stocks and the same figure for next year. So that means all that canola is being used here in Canada or going for export, not leaving a whole heck of a lot a leftover. So that's really driving up the prices right now.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the weather, this coming spring and summer is going to play a role in that as well. I mean, what do we know about soil moisture on the prairies right now?
Yeah, well, here in southern Manitoba, there's very little snow cover. Things are really dry. I understand that there's not much reserve moisture in the ground. I'm not so sure about Saskatchewan or Alberta, but things could be a little dicey here in Manitoba if we don't get some snow soon or a lot of rain in the spring.
Well, it's still sort of mid-late February, so and as we know, a lot can happen in between now and then. I guess we'll be watching the skies and we'll wait and see. Glenn, thanks very much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Glenn Halleck is a reporter for Markets Farm in Winnipeg. And that's our time for this week. I'd like to thank our guests, Brenda Shepp and Glenn Halleck. Also, thanks to Diana Martin of Farmtario and to Bruce Thorson for putting together this week's soundscape. We'll be back in a week with more from the Glacier Farm Media family of publications. This has been Between the Rows. I've been your host this week, Dave Bedard. Thanks for listening.
Your soil has a unique story. At Decisive Farming by TELUS Agriculture, we get that. Start using precise nutrient information to get optimal crop performance. Try our variable rate program risk-free today. Visit decisivefarming.com. Conditions apply.